Hello, everybody. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is the Skulls Cast, episode 29.
We're 29.
Yes. Always.
That's an auspicious number.
It is. It's so auspicious that this is a special Skulls Cast. This is extremely special. This is the Skulls Cast.
Is this the Skulls Cast where I get addicted to caffeine pills?
No. I mean, unless you want that. We could go, like, right now. If you wanted. Also, I don't think you can, within the space of an hour, actually get addicted to something. I mean, maybe you could.
I'll take you up on that bet another time. But what's special about this Skulls Cast?
What is special about this Skulls Cast, in fact, is that this Skulls Cast is the meta Skulls Cast. The Skulls Cast about this Skulls Cast and all past Skulls Casts and all future Skulls Casts.
This is the skull that holds within it the skull.
Yeah, the thing about the thing, the meta of the thing. You know, that's a grandiose way of putting it, but simply put, we've done this enough times, you and I, that we more or less know what we're about and about what we do. And so we can create a kind of archetype for all Skulls Casts and talk a little bit about what a Skulls Cast is and why it's different from everything else that's out there, largely by accident of what we've done so far and the pattern that you and I fall into when we embark on these conversations.
What is a Skulls Cast, Kaz?
Well, first of all, it's a one-hour-long rumination about a topic or series of miniature topics spread over that time, to either get a larger sense of an isolated topic in the case of some of the video games that we've reviewed or some of the other mutual topics that you and I have and commonly talk about, or the set reviews, which somehow always, even if we try to speed them up or slow them down, take that, you know, about an hour, and those are the, like, rapid micro-topics, each card as micro-topic. The topics that we cover are usually from our own experience or just, you know, two idiots bandying about ideas that really neither of us is an expert in. I don't think that anything we've done really comes from an area of expertise. I'm trying to think back of everything that I have said in this, and I don't want to really put the expert label on that. But we should have labels, you and I, especially as concerns the Magic the Gathering part of it that we do keep coming back to, and I think are always going to continue to come back to, because it's a game that you and I both play and are pretty much locked into by now, because it's honestly more fun to talk about than it is to play. Are you still with me?
Oh, I'm there. I thought you were going to just keep going with that thought.
Okay, well, when you remain silent like that, I have no indication that you're still there. So even if you can just give me an uh-huh every now and again.
Yes.
yes.
Should it sound really dismissive and...
That's fine, though. I mean, because it doesn't sound dismissive because I know what it's really about. I know the truth.
Okay.
So I would prefer to have evidence of life.
Speaking of evidence of life, since we talk about Magic a lot, Magic is sort of a complicated game. There are a whole bunch of codes and words that mean made-up things and a whole lot of strategies and non-strategies.
Indeed. And it keeps getting more complex over time.
The game only gets dumber.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is categorize our words about Wizard Game into three difficulty levels.
That's right.
The lowest difficulty level is Spalt.
Spalt.
Someone who is very new, or perhaps even completely unfamiliar with the game, could glean useful information from a Spalt level Magic discussion.
Yeah, Spalt level discussion is going to be us coming from the assumption that you just learned how to play. Like, you understand basic rules and can pilot a deck if we put it in your hands, but would probably have to read most of the cards. So we're talking like you understand when you can play instants and creatures and how to attack and block with creatures, and that's probably it. Maybe like, you might not even know that if you are a Spalt listener.
The second difficulty level is advanced.
Mm.
I suppose an advanced listener has a bit more of Wizard game under their belt, and maybe they understand some of the, I guess, finer and unwritten points of the game, see potential, understand more about interactions between different types of cards, potentials for advantageous or disadvantageous plays.
Yeah, the advanced listener is going to go beyond the mere rules of the game and be able to interpret a card's power level just by looking at it and understand topics like tempo and card advantage, and probably has already built many decks, probably has a consistent play group to play casual games. An advanced listener knows what the various formats of Magic are, what cards they contain, and what they mean. I would say an advanced listener could probably pass the level 1 judge exam, because they don't actually require that much of that, apparently, because I was at the that card store we usually go to, Medibot, the other day, and they called over this this kid who had been my second round opponent, and apparently he had passed the level 1 judge exam, and I'm like, are you kidding me? This guy doesn't know anything. He's like, I could pose him the simplest, like, judge trick question, and he would sit there and wonder about it and get it wrong. Ugh, anyway, but that's, that's about what I mean when I say advanced.
Advanced. And the third difficulty level, the highest difficulty level for playing Wizard game, is famous.
Famous. A famous listener is going to understand all of those topics, you know the rules of the game, probably know tournament procedure and rules, know all the formats, know the seasons that formats take on, the structure of tournaments at large, will probably have a first-hand, not first-hand, but a, what's the term for when you, like, know something off the top of your head? I don't know. They firsthand, as if they had met these people. Anyway, the famous listener is going to recognize names of people when we drop them who are either prominent players in the Magic world, prominent personalities, probably has like two or three websites bookmarked, drafts a lot, that kind of thing. That's a famous listener. And honestly, I don't know how often you and I, Medibot, are going to dip into a famous level conversation. No. I mean,
the gap between advanced and famous, most of the time you're really operating on the level of advanced, and you're doing pretty well when you're playing Magic and you've been playing Magic for a while.
Yeah, so let's leave the distinction at famous as being someone who not only knows how tournaments operate, but goes to them all the time, and like has their own FNM, and this really is that the thing that they do. You know, wait, and they spend weekends like sitting and playing Magic online, because apparently people do that.
The grinders.
Yes.
If you're a grinder, you're probably a grinder, famous.
You're famous.
At least we'd hope you're famous. And otherwise, why do you do it all the time?
Well, I mean, Ship It Hala is famous. He's got his own thing on Magic Academy, MTGO Academy, they call it. Man, they've got so many people there, too. And only, like, two of them are any good? Because you have Ship It Hala and then Loading Ready Run. And, like, everyone else is a wasteland. I mean, I defy you. Here, there we go. We'll throw a pact into this, a challenge, if you will. I defy you to watch any of those others who post on MTGO Academy and like listen to the whole thing all the way through, whatever they post, and then come back to me and say, you know, that was enlightening. He's actually really good at that.
That's, it's impossible, by
that's
the way.
That's the challenge. Time. Okay, well,
many bots. So we've established our three difficulty levels.
Those will be the difficulty levels.
Advanced and famous.
And up to now, we've been almost everything that we've done is the like advanced level. When I get into too much name dropping, that like dips into famous territory.
Yeah,
because
I am mostly an advanced level player of Wizard game.
Right, because what happened to me was that up to a point, I could spend money on cards and be fine and be comfortable, you know, disposable income, whatever. And beyond that point, I couldn't. And I wouldn't be able to build, like, real decks, because real decks require, like, that much more money. So I would substitute the money that I would be able to... the money that I could not spend on the game, and through my effort into simply learning more. So by now, I know lots of cards, and lots of rules, and lots of people's names that play the game or design the game. And honestly, I feel most expert at the design and philosophy of cards, because that's the thing that I've had the most time to ruminate about, and the thing that I can point to existing things and say, no, that's wrong, you're doing it wrong, even though you're the people who create this game. And
so that's... Whereas I feel most comfortable casting a 5-mana blue enchantment that does nothing, and then casting Recoil next turn.
The enchantments. I honestly don't know what it is about you and those big old do-nothing enchantments.
I think it's because, like, the first deck that I ever, like, built and piloted, and I built it, and I piloted it for years, was blue-black bounce discard with Warp Devotion and Megrim. And then Sunken Hope. And, like, I play all these dirtily enchantments that interact in this beautiful way so that my Waterfront Bouncer is now this sort of ascended killing machine.
Yeah, Waterfront Bouncer gets pretty sick in that setup, I will grant you. I'm guessing your common table must have been just soft to enchantments. Like, no one was running incidental
enchantment.
I mean,
it worked fine in middle school.
Yeah,
that's... Where we had, you know, the one guy playing blue-white permission control. Mm. We had a guy playing green stompy. You know, this is children playing Wizard game. And I got to high school, and it was full of people who had a lot of their parents' money to spend on Magic the Gathering. And they still weren't that good, but they were better, mostly because I had no means by which to change my deck. But they were still pretty weak on the whole, to the point where you could just make some dumb gimmick deck that would not fly in any sort of real competitive sense, but just that no one there would understand how to beat. Because the metagame at my high school was very much just everyone played aggro.
Yeah.
So you throw in, like, one thing that throws a wrench in aggro, and suddenly they get confused. You put an Armadillo Cloak on your Phantom Centaur, and they're like, what? But he dies, right? No.
Nah, dude, nah. You gotta level up. You gotta go from Spalt to Advanced here. You gotta understand those interactions.
So me as the goofy combo player, did not do so well against that.
You know, that's something else that I'll have to break down one of these days. We've lived under a lot of the assumptions of Mark Rosewater for a long time. Like, he's a very prominent person, and he loves to talk, and he likes the sound of his own voice, and he posts an article every week talking about the design of Magic cards. He's been doing this for, like, decades at this point.
Hundreds of years.
Actual decades have passed, and this guy, and he's so prominent, and he has these this collection of pet theories, and it's his entire worldview and his entire phrasing of everything that happens in magic falls within these categories and under these theories. And he keeps referring back to them, and he's like, if you want to learn more about this topic, you know, learn from me back when I was talking about it back here. And he collects his main topics and posts those. And this has turned it into the truth without any real analysis. It all leads back to his own bald assertions and these vague references to, oh, what do they call it? Market research. It's like, okay, well, I am at the level where I'm more interested in seeing that market research than hearing you talk about it. I would rather, like, see the numbers. Show me what your study was like. Because I have a feeling at this point that without too much effort, I can conduct a small and valid study of my own to disabuse either Mark Rosewater or anyone who listens to him of some of these prefabricated notions that he has. The Timmy Johnny Spike thing, for one. Magic cards as art versus magic cards as containing illustration. The necessity of illustration on cards. The theories that he and Wizards at large has about what the color pie is, what the five different colors represent, and how they assign mechanics to cards. As a small example of this, let's see, this will be Spalt understanding, okay?
Spalt.
Back in Shards of Alara, we had five different individual shards.
Shards.
Each shard represented a central color and two allied colors. Mm. And they created the world such that each of these shards was isolated from all the others. So that if you were on the white shard, you could cast white, blue, and green spells, and that was it. The other two colors didn't even exist if you were on the shard of Bant, as they called it. That was the white one. And, you know, on around the five. The whole set was supposed to be a multicolored thing. So that was the large theme of the set. So you saw a lot of multicolored cards. And really, that's the only hard and fast rule for what that set had to be. They had said, okay, we're doing multicolors, so we're going to have a much higher than usual proportion of cards that have more than one color on that one card. Sure enough. In the plane of Bant, there was a mechanic called Exalted. Whenever you attacked with a creature alone, that's, you know, just this one guy, anybody on your team who had Exalted would trigger. Many of them had additional mechanics to them that read, whenever a creature attacks alone, or whenever a creature you control attacks alone, something like that, because they don't give your bonuses to the other guy.
Yeah.
But whenever a creature you control attacks alone, give it this bonus. The Exalted mechanic itself was just the bonus of getting +1/+1. You would get one more power and toughness by attacking alone. So if you have, say, three guys on your team, and they're all 1/1s with Exalted, and if you attack with just one of them, he gets his own, and then he gets the bonus from the other two, so he attacks as a 4/4. And that's how the mechanic worked. And this was on the white shard, I'll remind you at this time. The problem is that is not a white mechanic. Not even remotely. The whole idea of the white's color philosophy, like deep down, is one of uniformity. It loves equality more than it loves anything else. It wants to see everything evened out. That's its idea of justice and fairness, and justice and fairness are a big part of what white is all about. Traditionally, this has been realized in cards through enchantments that give all of your team a bonus.
The Anthem.
Yeah. any anthem effect or crusade is going to be just a little enchantment that says, okay, all your dudes are bigger, or all of your dudes have a bonus. They even push the uniformity front of white so hard that they've justified it as having spells that balance the game in an even way. So a spell that says, destroy all creatures, so that nobody has any creatures. They consider that a white thing to do just because it is uniform. I also minorly disagree on that point. However, I do agree that it's a better expression of white's power and white's philosophy than is many of the other mechanics that we have seen in white. So we might come back someday to the idea that white's philosophy needs to draw back from always having a sweeper, always being able to kill creatures. I think that's just entrenched at this point. Exalted was by no means entrenched, though. That was a completely new mechanic at the time. So they had no reason to get it wrong, but I know why they did. Each of the shards, each of the central color with allies, which are those five, had its own design group. Like, they actually split the design teams into, like, five mini-teams, and each team built a mini-block that was just those colors. And they each came up with their own mechanics. Now, they all knew that they could use cycling, but beyond that, they didn't share any mechanics. They even didn't, up to a point, talk to each other about what they had put in until everybody had a mini-block, and then they collectively came in and put it together. The black shard already had a very good and very black mechanic. Actually, Unearth is probably more red than it is black, to be perfectly honest, but it's at least black enough to fit in its shard. Exalted, though, while it was put on white cards and styled like a white mechanic, is very much a black mechanic.
You pick your one guy, and he's better than everyone else.
That's black's whole deal. Black loves individuality.
You have your followers, and you have your leader.
If we had, instead of calling the mechanic exalted, called it supplication, no one would ever believe that it was a white mechanic. No one would. They would look at that and be like, oh, of course it's
black.
Well,
do Magic players know what the word supplication means?
Sure they do. No. Magic players are better at vocabulary words than other people, because they have to read cards all the time, and they're constantly learning new words because cards have to be named different things than other cards. I mean,
okay.
Magic players know what autochthonous means.
I don't.
Oh, you've never played with an autochthon worm.
I have, but I don't need to know what autochthon means. I just know it's the big convoke guy.
Right, but you know how big he is.
He's massive.
He's autochthonous.
Is that a massiveness word?
It's like massiveness. Well, I'll send Medibot off to the dictionary and...
Is that like Brobdingnagian? that's the most massivest word I know.
I think preternatural would be the most massivist that I know. But we'll have to both go to a dictionary, I think, after this. Mm. But my point is, I'm pretty sure that they would know what supplicant or supplication is. Dark Supplicant, that's a dude. That's a magic card.
There we go.
Or even, I mean, we could call it, like, slavery.
I don't know if it would be good to put the word slavery on black cards, Kaz.
It probably wouldn't.
Subservience?
Or just, like, servant. Servitor. Because that's what he is, rather than what he's doing. Although we like to make creature mechanics into... I actually have a hard time coming up with whether creature mechanics get... A noun or verb treatment, you know, something that he is or something that he does. You know, flying is a classic example of that. It's a verb, the gerund form. So it kind of toes the line between verb and noun, and that's what we like out of mechanics. But the point is, with that tiny variation in just the phrasing of the ability itself, the ability becomes perfect in the color black and its philosophy. Because black does not like uniformity. It likes having one powerful thing, usually the, you know, black mage himself, any price for power, that
the
kind of
pit
thing.
Lord.
The soloist.
You
That's
get the
why...
pit lord and a whole bunch of idiots that you sacrifice to your pit lord.
Yeah. That's why it has
Because you love
mechanics.
That pit lord.
It has recurring mechanics of sacrificing many to create one bigger guy. There have been plenty of demons that embody this. It's been around since the beginning. Black has always done this. In Alpha, in the first ever printed set, they had a demon who represented the power of black magic who could do that. And he was the biggest thing around. Oh well. My rumination about this point comes down to the fact that Exalted is black, and it has always been black by color theory, and it just got printed in white. And because it got printed in white in the Shard of Bant, that meant that blue and green got to share a little bit, even though they also really have no business having that mechanic. Like, they justified it in green as green can pump creatures. And they justified it in blue, not at all.
Blue gets to do everything because blue is the color of being smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably a discussion for another time, and one that they pretended to draw down from, but then they went and printed Snapcaster Mage and just blew the lid right off that. Unbelievable. Well, sure enough, to justify my original assumption about the mechanic, we can look forward to a new core set, M13, Yay. Coming out this summer, where the returning mechanic is Exalted, and it's getting printed on black cards. That's right.
Because
that's where it always belonged. But now we have to now we have to live that down.
Going back to something you had mentioned a little earlier about illustrations on magic cards.
Yes.
And magic cards as art. I think a good question to ask to anyone who tries to talk about art on magic cards is this. I guess you can answer it right now if you'd like.
Okay.
What do you think of the art on Stasis?
I see. When you say the art on Stasis, I immediately presume that you're talking about the illustration and not the card itself.
Yes, the picture box.
Yeah, so you could actually
box.
Take the picture box and separate it from the card and then treat it as art. And Stasis holds up under that, and I believe in it as art, and I like it.
How well do you think it serves as the code's illustration?
Not at all. Terribly. Meaningless. No connection at all. You could put, like, any other picture on there and it would make more sense. It is profoundly too abstract for the card and fails as an illustration in that sense. Ordinarily, when I talk about just the art in cards, or a card being art, I'm talking about the whole thing, and you know, without like removing anything from it to micro consider, like we just did. That includes the card frame and the illustration that it does have, but really, the implementation of the mechanics, how it functions in the game, what kinds of things it works with, the flavor text that's on it, and the whole thing all together, and all of these individual parts working together like a mobile or a machine that just sits there and doesn't really do anything. Have you ever seen a machine that's just built to be?
To just go?
Yeah, that doesn't serve a purpose other than to, like, move and interact.
I think so. I think I liked it. Because it was real good at what it did.
Yeah. Like, those are cool. And that's what I think of when I talk about Magic cards as art, which is rare. Because, apart from your audience, I don't think I could even broach the topic. I don't really have a common acquaintance of people that I can broach the topic of art with.
I think that, as far as magic code as art, I'm again going to go to an enchantment that does nothing. Blue enchantment.
Man.
It might in fact be my favorite code in all of magic. It is ambiguity.
Ooh.
I feel that every part of that code comes together towards a common idea.
It does. It also has greater license to having been printed in an unset.
That's true. But I feel like they really took that opportunity well.
Hmm. I would probably have to go deep in the tank on this one to remember or find my favorite, most artful card where, like, everything works and the flavor text just is perfect, everything is good. And I would probably have to go pretty far back because the kind of illustration that I like on cards is the kind that they've been doing less and less of as time goes on, which is an abstraction that still makes sense for the game. All the time, you see, okay, the creature art, it's like a dude, you know, he's a soldier wielding a sword, or it's a big beast, and you see it, it's right there, and I'll give them that. Okay, it's a creature, it should look like a creature, right? But when they make spells that do things, and it's magic, okay? The cool part about being a wizard is casting magic spells. That should not look like anything familiar to me. Because I don't cast wizard spells in life. It's something I can't do. I can go get a cat, alright? I can own a creature.
It's a 1/2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd better not rumble with him. Don't
get in a fight.
I'm probably a human token. That's no good. I guess cats can jump higher. Maybe that's why he gets the second point of toughness.
He leaps and lands on your head where you cannot defend yourself.
But even with fantastical creatures, it's usually just some kind of familiar animal shape warped or reapplied into something that becomes a unique word. You know, the chimera, the basilisk, the esquilax. All of, you know...
The Feldegriff.
Even the Feldegriff. Even the Richard Garfield PhD. Oh, the anagrams. Anyway, those are all things that I can consider as almost photoreal, you know? It's a creature, there it is, that's what it looks like, fine. A magic spell should not be that. It shouldn't necessarily look like anything. Sure, if I'm blasting you with a lightning bolt or a fireball, it's like, okay, I'm the little dude here who's casting it, and it's coming out of my hand, and a lightning bolt shoots out. Fine. I accept. But when they have spells or enchantments that do aught else, it should be something more magical than it is. Almost all the time, they show you, like, a guy getting it. You know, there's some dude in the foreground, and he's getting it. He's getting hit by the spell right at that moment.
He's the target.
Or even multiple dudes sometimes. They're the target. Yeah, they're getting it. And then we're right back into a photoreal representation of usually a human being harmed in some way by a magic spell, or distorted, or cut to bits, or charred, sliced into ribbons, maybe presented with some horrifying revelation, and, you know, their eyes are exploding, and There are no end of ways to horrify and maim the human body in an illustration on card art for Magic. And boy, have they been through a lot of them. But I want to see something simpler, honestly. Something that looks more like art and less like a photoreal representation of some mage with a glowing force projected at some other person. You know, he's got the glowing hands, and then there's glowing stuff coming off of them.
He's casting a spell!
And then someone else is on the other end of that chain of magic stuff. He's got the magic hands. I don't want to see any more of the magic hands. I don't want to see any more of the glowing power stuff. I'm sick of it. It's way too easy to make 3D graphics that look like that stuff, which is why we see it all over the place in video games. And I don't like it there, either. It's too much. It doesn't mean anything anymore. You just throw these, like, lens flares and particle effects on whatever you're doing. That doesn't have the capacity to mean. Your illustration should have the capacity to mean, and be able to connect me to what is going on in your magic spell. That's the point. That's why we put illustration on cards. So that we have some unifying force, something that I can look at and internalize and think, yeah, that's what that does. That's what that looks like. I want it to be more like stasis. I want it to be abstract. So stasis is both a good and poor example of this. That I absolutely adore the style, but my god, how does a clown man on the other side of the thing mean I can't untap unless I pay cost during upkeep? Or how does that mean stasis? How does we have all these interlocking bits that don't mean anything next to each other. And that's kind of a shame.
Which is another key part of Blue Magic. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. You know, I think if you have that soft spot for big blue enchantments that don't really do anything, I have a soft spot for any given red card that is not itself a creature or made to deal damage to something. Could probably also take out Falter effects. Yep. So if it's a red card that doesn't do any of those things, I probably irrationally love it.
You know what's a good red card that I think has a good, sort of the same reason why I like ambiguity?
Lay it on me.
Stranglehold.
Ooh. Man. I do really like Stranglehold on top of, on top of everything that it is. And the illustration is, again, too photoreal for my taste, but it does work. And I believe in it, and it's effective. So it's good in that sense. And that's the weakest link, because the rest of it is perfect. Like, name, cost, effect, the like simplified form of the illustration, all together. Even the flavor text on there. Really wonderful. Yeah, Stranglehold. Yeah.
I'm the guy taking extra turns, and I'm okay when someone plays Stranglehold, because you know what? That's fair. Sure, I'd really like to search my library, you know, Court of Calling out my Mystic Snake to counter your
enough
whatever it is you just did.
That's enough.
Just like, oh, no. You have me in a headlock, because you have had enough of my bullshit.
I love to think of it that way. It's like, if we're wizards, then I'm a beefy wizard who just has you in a headlock.
Yeah, you're the luchador wizard.
That's it. That's the extent of the magic behind this spell.
Koth probably at some point during a fight, Koth will put someone in a headlock. That's a red thing to do.
Yeah. Hey, weren't we talking about planeswalkers making more sense as pro wrestlers?
Yeah. I actually told that to someone the other night, and they went ahead and drew a few of them as luchadors.
Oh, that's excellent.
Pretty neat. Saw Tomio going off the turnbuckle.
I mean, the whole story that they have makes more sense as a, like, story for pro wrestling than it does as, like, any other narrative.
Man. And it was pointed out to me that, like, dragons are allowed to be pro wrestlers, so Nikki is allowed to join in on Koth and Gary's fun.
Wait, dragons are allowed to be pro wrestlers?
There was some pro wrestler called the Dragon, or Silver Dragon, or I don't know. Cone could probably be a pro wrestler.
I mean,
he's
there was
beefy.
Jake the Snake, but I don't think he was really a snake. I think he was...
But is Nicol Bolas really a dragon, or is it a metaphor for man's lust for power?
You know what they do say is that when you become a planeswalker, it doesn't matter that you were a human or a goblin. The planeswalker-ness is now your definition. And that's why it doesn't say creature planeswalker, human Garruk.
That's why it doesn't say artifact planeswalker Cone.
Yeah. Or at least that's the flimsy, nonsensical justification that they gave us based on needing certain things to appear on the card and not interact in other weird ways. But hey, Gideon just becomes a human soldier again.
Gideon
Woo!
Would also be a good wrestler.
Gideon would be a great wrestler, man. He would always be like, he would do all of the moves off the ropes. He'd be a really like rope-oriented wrestler. I forget, what do they call that? Where you like throw someone in the ropes and then like they have to like turn around and run back at you, and then you do like a move that can only be done with their momentum or something. I thought those had a word. Maybe not. It's been too long since I played a THQ wrestling game with my buddies, where you could make your own wrestler. The THQ system of wrestling games was so good. I was astounded.
Garruk is just doing like big suplexes and throws on people.
Yeah.
And maybe Koth is putting people in, like, triangle locks and stuff.
Ooh. And Jace would be, like, one of the managers on the sidelines who, like, tells people that they have to fight or makes the rules. And then he's just sort of, like, there and crossing his arms. And he, like, he's always walking beside some other wrestler, and they very occasionally get him to come into the ring.
Yeah.
He would be the Vince.
Jace is Vince?
Yeah. Jace is...
All right. I accept
one of,
this
or
reality.
One of the McMahons, anyway. I think at this point we're slipping into famous level.
Yes.
Okay.
Magic code as
magic
oat,
cards.
The oat on the magic code.
Arts. I guess that's something we always lapse into with the Skulls cast anyway. We are very much talking about the science and the art of whatever topic we discuss. And up to now it's been, you know, magic cards, video games, board games. We did Cosmic Encounter once, which I do have a small follow up on, perhaps if we do have time for it. So it's been mostly about games.
Yeah.
But it's not locked into that.
No.
Not by any stretch.
We are well versed in all areas of academia and anti academia.
Well, I do like to talk a lot, and that's a good substitute for all of those things.
I do like to know facts.
I'm gonna make a yummy noise again. That was pretty good. I was like,
You can just see the melted butter.
That's
brain butter.
No, that's very much what we do with facts. We take the fact butter. And we just melt it.
Until it
becomes that perfect golden consistency.
And then you pour it on your brain.
You can't pour it yet. No, you have to clarify it. Then we clarify the fact. By taking the scooping up the whiter part of the curdling parts of the fact and leaving only the clarified fact butter.
Clarified fact. Then you pour it on your brain?
Then you can pour it on the brain.
and then it goes into the cracks, and it draws out the brain's flavor.
Mm.
And what you want to do is cook it at a really low temperature for 2.5 hours.
Hey, man, brain is actually really tasty, though. If you ever get a chance to eat the brain of an animal, you should. I am not lying.
Okay, Kaz, you are not lying.
I'm just... That's the clarifying part.
I know you to not be a liar.
I don't think that... I don't know where I was going with that. Must have gotten the butter on my brain again. But anyway, yes, try brain if you ever get the chance. You just cannot pass up an experience like that. I'm probably getting hungry. That's why I'm talking about, like, eating food and eating brains. So we'll also come back to the topic of zombie rights again and again, I think.
Yes.
That's one that's near and dear to my heart, and one that I think a lot of people could benefit from. Zombie rights will be there. What other stuff? Ooh, thought experiments. I like when we start off with a thought experiment and just and just talk.
I haven't done one of those in a while. I gotta de-rust and re-grease all my experimentation engines. You combine grease with rust, it turns into buttercream frosting, actually. That's how you make it. The name is kind of misleading, I admit.
I don't know what kind of food I would put that on.
Put on some sheet metal. You can eat metal, right, Kaz?
What? No.
Oh, is that...
I mean, I
is
can...
Is that just me?
Well, I can eat a very small amount of iron, maybe.
But, like, because... you couldn't just, you know, have a bar of selenium as a snack.
Not the way I could have a bar of nougat or chocolate. No.
I guess we've just been raised differently.
I don't have much of my food in bar form, to be fair. So maybe that's the ticket. I'll figure out a way to have the metal food in a different form.
You could grind it into a powder and just mix it into your milk.
And most importantly, what a Skull's Cast about is just sitting here, Medibot and myself, talking back and forth, engaging whatever comes to our mind. I think so far we've had some really, really structural casts. And most of them have been that way, where we actually,
the set
you know,
reviews are very structured.
You and I, you know, sit and plan beforehand, and we're like, okay, we're going to talk about this,
Okay, Cass, what are we going to cast about tonight?
Yeah, I don't know. This is the topic. Yeah, let's go. And then, that's honestly the only prep that we do. Except for that one time that I looked up George Salmanazar. And
yeah,
I, like, actually researched
about
facts about him. Yeah, but that was as far as it goes. Yeah. We don't pregame for this. Probably even as much as we should.
Nah.
No, it's all there. It's stuff that we just are interested in or are disinterested in and simply exposed to way too much.
Yes. We are performing an expose. We are muckrakers.
That I will accede to. That is absolutely factual. Raking in the muck.
We are raking the muck. We sort the muck by density. We have our muck manipulators. We have tongs. We have scoops. We have shovels. We have spatulas. And these are all used to manipulate the muck that we have raked with our muck rakes. That we own because we are muckrakers. LLC.
Hey, hold on. We haven't licked up yet. We're not licked.
What?
LLCs. They're the licks. How would you pronounce LLC if it was a word? If it was just. You wouldn't pronounce. No. You would say lick.
No, it's definitely a soft C.
Oh, so, like, we're talking about sorporate rights? Sorporations?
Well, corporate rights don't exist, or at least shouldn't, so it must be sorporate.
All right. Well, maybe we'll be insorporated sometime. Until then, we ain't licked yet. Not by a long shot.
No, sir.
Ooh, wait. There was one more thing.
One more thing.
There is... Oh, Jackie! Ah, that was horrible. I made a screeching... Brilliant. No. You didn't see the waveform as that passed it that I'm looking at.
Just wait until
I'm mixing these together. It'll make feedback or something.
I gladly look forward to the waveform.
I look forward to all waveforms. Ah, right. I meant to give everyone a preview of the next couple Skulls casts as well. Since, you know, this is the special one, number 29, you get to get a little sneak peek of the next couple of topics that Medibot and I are going to talk about that we have, at this moment, yet to create.
All right, well, lay that preview on us.
Right. Because I had decided what the topics were, and I hadn't even told you yet. Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Wait.
Prepare your
brain. Is this one of
those
things where it's like I was supposed to do a thing, but then I did a different thing?
No. You're performing adequately. It's pretty good. Pretty good. So in our future, we're gonna review Fez. Medibot and I have both played through Fez, I believe, to completion.
Yes.
I feel completed anyway. That one is going to be spoilerific, by the way, if you haven't played the game. So
yeah.
It's one to, I guess, avoid listening to if you want the totally virgin experience, which I will spoil the game sort of caters to.
Yes.
But honestly, I think it would be perfectly fine to listen to everything that we have to say about the game and then play it and experience it for yourself, and you'll come up with your own experience out of that. And that's really the most important feature of a game, is that you experience something through rules. Okay, so we're gonna talk about Fez. We're going to talk about what games are. That's going to be a topic, and one that I want to cover before we do our book review.
Yes.
We're going to do at least one book review, possibly two, because Medibot has loaned me two books.
I got some books, and then I read them, and then I gave them to Kat.
And
I don't think
I
finished one of them, so I'll need it back.
Oh. Well, I'm taking copious notes, because the topic is engaging enough that I want to give it a full measure and full perspicacity and that kind of thing. So that the one that I'm on now... I can't remember the title because it has too much stuff on the cover.
Okay, so it's the
Rise
one with the long title.
No. Rise of the Video Game Zinesters. Yeah. Zinesters.
I think it's Zinesters.
It is Zinesters because it's based on magazine.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stick with Zinesters now that
Zinesters.
I have... Because that sounds much more Gestaltan and authoritarian, which is ironic if you've read even the preface of the book, but... Anyway. So, okay. Fez, what's a game? Rise of the Video Game Zinesters book review.
Bastion.
Shoot. Bastion. Absolutely, we were going to review Bastion because that's
Diablo
another game
3
that we had played, and we're going to review Diablo 3, which in all likelihood, if you're listening to this, is a game that you have played. So, yeah, there's what, like 60 million of us.
Something like that. It
Diablo
seems
3?
To be pretty popular.
Yikes. It's so popular that I can no longer sell anything in the auction house because there are too many things there.
Butts.
It has become impossible to sell anything in the auction
house. The house is full.
It's full.
The free market has been destroyed.
It also feels like I'm staring at an infinite system whenever I search for an item in the auction house. Because it'll list, like, numbers, and you can, like, march through them out to 52 or whatever pages.
But we're sort of getting into details here.
Okay, fair enough. But we're going to review Diablo 3.
Getting Diablo 3. And whatever else strikes our collective fancy, for we are gorgeous heroes.
Indeed, indeed. And we will conclude this Skulls cast, as we mean to conclude every single other one, with Skulls.
Skulls.